Nice talk. No, that's all right. I can give one anyway. That's not a problem.
But then let me give you a little bit of culture and direction. I believe what I sent to you was that what we've asked a number of speakers is who is a Jew, who is not a Jew.
All right. Yeah.
How does someone become a Jew?
Right. So, okay.
Are there any ways in which your movement can be flexible, and what are the red lines of your movement?
Okay, those are wonderful guidelines. Of course, Masorti Jews think that we are the mainstream. Of course, everybody does. It's like Israeli, if you ask anybody about Israeli politics, you're on the left or you're on the right, they'll tell you, well, I'm in the center, and then they're the crazy people on the left and the crazy people on the right. So that's kind of how we feel about our view of our approach to Jewish life, that we represent the true heirs of Pharisaic Judaism, and everybody else is either obscurantist or impossibly fast and loose. We think that a Jew is somebody born to a Jewish mother, that if one is not born to a Jewish mother and one wants to become Jewish, that you do that through a process of conversion. We take seriously the halachic mandates for what that involves. But we do not. Here's what I think is the central definition of what makes Masorti conservative Jews. The term is the same, I think you know. How we stand apart from the rest of the Jewish world as people define themselves at this moment. For us, our reference group, our criterion for who we are and who we serve, is the vast majority of Jews who want to remain Jewish. And we trust that if someone joins a Jewish community that is made up of Jews who want to remain Jews and who want to maintain contact with tradition, but not necessarily committed fully to a life of Torah and mitzvot, that a person who joins that community will learn mimetically what it means to be Jewish. And that's the traditional way of doing things that the Gemara already outlines. You teach people Ketzat Mitzvot Chamurot. I know you've studied this. Ketzat Mitzvot Chamurot, Ketzat Mitzvot Kalot. You accept them into the community. And that's the beginning of a process in which they continue to learn what it means to be Jewish. And when I say that we feel that the way we do that represents the mainstream, I'll tell you about, I think I hope we'll have occasion to talk about a number of cases and issues here in Eretz Yisrael with regard to conversion that are instructive, I think, for trying to sort out different approaches. About 15 years ago, the Masorti Movement office here got a call from Na'amat, the Labor Party's women's organization. They have a strong legal department, and they said to us, "You do giur. You do halachic conversion, do you not?" We said, "Yeah, well, we think we do, yeah." And they said, "Well, we have 13 families who've come to us because they've adopted children from abroad, some as recently as the last few months, and some as long as a dozen years ago. And in all of these cases, they've taken their child to the local Rabbanut, and the local Orthodox state-funded rabbis have said, we won't convert your child unless you sign the child up for a mamlachti dati education, right? The state religious schools, and agree that that you'll make your home kosher and that you'll begin to observe Shabbat. If you do all these things, then we will convert your child, and if you don't, we won't." And that was completely de novo. That had never been the case before. The state religious courts regarded themselves as the courts of the whole, as the rabbinate of the whole Jewish people. And so they would regularly take children from families who were not particularly observant, but the kids were growing up speaking Hebrew, going to the public schools, learning Tanakh in school, learning something of the rabbinic tradition in school, observing Jewish holidays as their annual calendar, living in a society in which there's a sense of Shabbat in the public realm. And the rabbinate would, whether reluctantly or not, I don't know, but they would regularly convert the children of Chiloni families And the children would be listed in the population registry as Jewish, and they could get married, and they'd be part of the Jewish public. And I'm sure that the Orthodox rabbinate at that time said to themselves, well, these people are potentially, like everybody else in the society, potentially shomrei mitzvot, and we've made them part of the Jewish majority. And they, at a certain point, around 1991, 92, just completely stopped. They don't do that anymore. Now, they make a lot of demands, and they insist that those demands are ongoing conditions, and they will revoke the giyur of somebody for whom they themselves did giyur, a concept hitherto unknown in halakha. Right? Usually you do giyur, and then if you're either an observant Jew or you're a lapsed observant Jew, but you're not, you know, you can't, the rabbinic court can't come back and say, well, I'm sorry, but that we don't recognize our own conversion. And so as a result, we took on these 13 families, and we brought the kids to Tevilah in a mikveh. We have a problem with the use of the public mikveh, so we had to do it at Kibbutz Hanaton up north, which is a kibbutz started and run by the movement in large part. And oddly enough, by the time it was, the case came before the High Court of Justice, Bagatz. If you've learned how the legal system works here, it's a panel of Supreme Court justices who hear appeals against the government. By that time, the state rabbinate in various places had found ways to do the conversion for almost all of these children, because the last thing they wanted was for them to go through a Masorti conversion. But in any case, we won the court case. And the state of Israel is required by the courts to recognize, the Ministry of the Interior has to recognize conversions done by conservative or reform Jews, rabbis here in Israel. That was in the 1990s. They were required to do that in a decision that came down in the winter of 1995. So I think that in that regard, our approach represents what had been the approach of the state rabbinate. No different. They've moved off into a much more rigid and demanding position, and we've remained where they once were. And I think that in many ways, I think convincingly argue that our position represents the halachic mainstream over the centuries. We recognize that the context in which the rules need to be applied are different from country to country. 2 weeks ago, I sat in a Beit Din with a colleague from Israel and a colleague in Uganda. And in Uganda, we're dealing with people who chose to be Jewish on the basis of religious commitment that they arrived at by reading the Old Testament, as they would have put it at the time, and the New Testament, and saying, it doesn't make any sense to me, all this Jesus stuff. And they chose to become Bnei Israel. And there, the context is way more demanding, because it's hard to become part of a mimetic community when you're really just a cluster of people in a small subsistence farming village in East Africa. So there, I'll give you an odd thing that occurred. We had a child whose father was one of the grandchildren of the original Jews. There were a group of Jews in Uganda following a leader named Kakungulu who decided to become Jews 100 years ago. And they were even underground as Jews for some time during the Idi Amin years in the 70s. They had to hide and practice Judaism in secret. And in the 1990s, the 2000s, they began to get formal conversion to Judaism in several waves. So there's a young fellow whose father was the grandchild of one of the students of Kakungulu. And he himself isn't particularly observant. And whatever, I don't know what the story is with his family, he has come to live with an uncle in the village that's the center of the Jewish community in eastern Uganda, near Mbale. The local rabbi didn't want to do conversion for this kid, despite the fact that the kid at 14 really wanted to be Jewish, like his father and his uncle, but his mother hadn't been Jewish. He's living with an aunt who is Muslim. His uncle's married out. And the Muslim aunt, we asked him, you know, so you live in her house, and this is a society in which you don't say no to the parents or the elders. She'll ask you to do work for her on Shabbat, won't she? And he said, yes. And your aunt will cook things for you on Shabbat. And we said, well, we can't put you in the position of having to break mitzvot from the moment that you become Jewish. That just isn't going to work. And the solution that was worked out within about a minute and a half was that he would go and live with his school principal. And you should have seen the kids smile. It would have gone through the roof. Adoption is a very informal thing, it turns out, in Uganda. And the child is now living with his school principal, who's Jewish and who keeps a kosher home. And so, you know, our criteria of what it meant to become part of a Jewish community there are totally different from what our criteria would be in North America, and certainly a third set of expectations here in Israel. It's clearly contextual, but in any of those cases, our understanding is that conversion to Judaism means becoming part of a Jewish community. It means committing to learning the rules and norms of that community. And we trust that the process of conversion, which in North America and in Israel, for people who were not born into Jewish life, lots of stories about people who were and who had to come to us anyway for conversion. Usually it's a process of study that encompasses about a year for an adult. And we teach people much of the basis of Shabbat, which is really the core, and from that you can get at all the other ideas of Jewish life. Chagim, Tfilah, Kashrut, the practical things of daily life as a Jew. We ask people to be an active part of a Jewish community for that year or so. And then we bring them to a Beit Din in which we ask them the kinds of questions that one should ask. We ask them some factual knowledge questions. Some people do better, some people do less well. Among the people who come to us sometimes in Israel are people who have really serious learning disabilities, and they're really unable to meet the criteria of the Orthodox courts, which are, in many cases, I'm sure in many cases it's not so, but in many cases are really not at all understanding of their learning problems and needs. And we ask people, in all seriousness, what do you need this for? Why do you want to be Jewish? And I want to tell you what people tell us. It's really interesting. Every month, I meet women from Bolivia and Cuba and India and Nepal, but mostly from Spanish-speaking Western Hemisphere, who've met some really hunky Israeli guy on his trip around the world after the army. And sometimes it's a tawdry story of meeting on the beach in Brazil, and sometimes it's a little more on the up and up. But either way, they've developed a relationship. They've come to Eretz Yisrael. In many cases, they're already civilly married. And I say to them, look, your boyfriend or husband's family completely accept you and love you. And you've told me yourself that if you didn't convert, it would still be okay. And you know what? We would consider conversion of children in this country, something that Masorti rabbis would not do in North America. But you have a child being brought up by a non-Jewish mom in this society who wants to be supportive, we would do the conversion for your children if they wanted it or needed it, or you wanted that for them, without your converting. What do you need this for? Why do you want to be Jewish? And we get the same answer from all of these people. I know what they're going to tell me as soon as I ask the question. And it's fascinating to me as an insight into Israeli society that I didn't have living here for 20-something years. They say to us, on Friday nights, my husband's family gets together at his parents' house. He and his siblings, and many of them have children, and it's a big, warm family event. And it's like that every Friday night, and it's like that in every holiday. And I don't want to be an outsider. I want to be part of that. I want to be part of that. That's a completely different thing from saying, I read the Old Testament, the New Testament, and I found I didn't need a new one because my old one was holding up just fine. Completely different, and to me it says a great deal that I hadn't realized about the strength of Israeli society. Something that these people regarded as a Jewish experience. It involves kiddush and it involves some motzi and it involves a little bit of a Shabbat atmosphere, even in these supposedly self-defined chiloni families, so many of them, that it has the power of attraction for the non-Jewish spouse who's come to be part of it. I'm going to stop there and see whether you have specific questions you'd like to ask, or whether you'd like me to, first of all, clarify anything that I said. It was a little bit rambling. As I said, I hadn't thoroughly prepared. But what I tried to stress is, first of all, that we think that we are using the traditional halacha criteria, that the traditional halacha criteria involve accepting people into a community where the process continues for a long period of time of learning what it means to be Jewish, in practice and in theory, And that we think that, and that we do that with sensitivity to the social context of various Jewish communities around the world. Questions of clarification, first of all, anything? You'll also discover that I don't hear anything in my left ear, so if you're on this side, you'll have to gesticulate wildly for me to notice.
Who makes up the
Beit Din? We do not have a level of dayanut. Any member of the rabbinical assembly in Israel, we're about 150, 160 rabbis, can be part of our Beit Din. It's the usual subject. I have staff people who work for me who are often part of the Beit Din, and I will call on local rabbis when we meet in the north and local rabbis who meet in the south to join us. Sometimes it's the sponsoring rabbis who've taught the candidates who sit in a Beit Din for their candidates and the others on that particular day. But we don't have any specific criteria of dayanut.
Either gender.
Yes. Yes. Our giur is done by men and by women. Yeah. Yeah. And I should also say, since this has become a big issue, thanks to our, we once thought, good colleague in Washington, male dayanim are not in the room when women immerse in the mikvah. We are outside listening, and one of our female colleagues is inside in the room, and vice versa for the other way around for the male candidates. You can ask me about the problematics of gay candidates for conversion in that regard, and it is an issue. Aside from clarifications, any kinds of questions, please.
For a person who grew up either in a Jewish home or in a home with patrilineal descent, is there more of an expedited process of conversion based on, depending on a person's case, but a person who had a Jewish descent could maybe have an easier better experience converting than somebody who did not grow up with any Jewish
family? We hope it's not a better experience, but it can certainly be a faster experience, yeah. Again, it's contextual. If it's somebody, we deal with people from the former Soviet Union here all the time who are, Jewish on a father's or a grandfather's side and grew up here. People from, whose parents came or they themselves came as children from the former Soviet Union. And we do take seriously the idea that for Zera Yisrael, as the halachic sources speak about it in the last century and a half or so, that one can do a much less rigid process of conversion. We take into account the state of mind of the person involved. Somebody who, I got a call from a colleague, an email from a colleague 3 or 4 summers ago saying, my stepson just proposed to his girlfriend, whom we all adore, and she totally floored him by telling him, there's something I never told you about myself, I'm not Jewish. And he said, what do you mean you're not Jewish? She said, no, really, I'm not Jewish. He was floored. He said, well, but I know your family. She said, yeah, you know my parents and my father's parents in Ashdod. We came to live from the Ukraine. We came to live here with my father's side of the family, and they're Jewish. But my mother's not Jewish, and her side of the family isn't Jewish. And so I'm not Jewish, but I never told you. She studied for about 4 months, actually the two of them together, one evening a week, did a lot of reading, took part in some synagogue services that they weren't familiar with, and we did the conversion in a lot less than a year for this woman who really regarded herself already as part of the Jewish community, the Hebrew-speaking majority. She had done elementary school, middle school, high school, and university in Israel. She was really already very much part of Jewish society, and nobody had paid attention. Nobody in the boyfriend's family had paid attention to the fact that on paper she wasn't Jewish. So yeah, we do go very easy. We had a weird case in September. No, it's not so weird. I wish it were weird. A guy came to us and he said, he was getting married with our rabbi in Be'er Sheva, the guy who's the rabbi of our congregation in Be'er Sheva, Mauricio Balter. And he said, we asked him, what's your story? So he said, well, that's my girlfriend I came with today, who's outside the room. She's also from Be'er Sheva. We met in the army, and we went to the Rabbanut to sign up to get married. And the Rabbanut wanted to vet me, because I was born in the former Soviet Union, and so they sent me to a group in Yerushalayim called Shorashim. They're actually apparently associated with the Rabbanei Tzohar. I hadn't heard of them. Shoreshim, these people really know their stuff. They looked at these papers that we brought. I went with my mother, he said, we drove from Be'er Sheva to Yerushalayim, we sat with them. And they're looking over the papers that we brought, and they apparently really know what they're doing, because they looked at it and they said, this isn't right, something's not right here. And they looked at my mother and said, is he adopted? And my mother blanched and gulped and said, yes. And that was the first I knew, he said, that I'd been adopted. She had never told him. And there was no indication whatsoever that his birth mother was Jewish. So that was kind of a crisis for him, an identity crisis and a family crisis. But he loves his mom and he trusts her, and he didn't, you know, he said it was a long, quiet ride home. But in the meantime, he said to the folks from Shoreshim, well, what do I do now? And they said, well, you can go through a conversion. And he said, well, what would that involve? And they said, well, you'll study for a year, and then at the end of the year, you'll go to live with a Jewish family for a month. And he said, I've been living with a Jewish family for 26 years. I put on tefillin every morning. What do you want from me? And he came to us, because the rabbinate was unwilling to cut him a break in any way, despite the fact that he'd had a religious Jewish upbringing, and as he said, he lays tefillin every morning. I mean, so we did what I would proudly call a quickie conversion for this fellow, because it was really, clearly only a matter of formality. And I'm sorry that he didn't have a rabbinate wedding, because that is what he and his wife had wanted. But that he wasn't willing to wait a year and go live with a Jewish family for a month. So I tell the story without any sense of joy about that, but pride that we're able to offer the kind of religious services for people in this society that we think the state rabbinate ought to be providing, and once did. Bavakasha. Sure. What I meant about that was if you're concerned about who's in the room when someone takes off their clothes and go into a mikveh, so it has been pointed out to us that gay rabbis, gay candidates for conversion, may be made uncomfortable by circumstances different from that straight people would be uncomfortable with about who's in the room with them when they go into mikveh. So we actually haven't dealt with that issue yet. We still have men in the room when men go in the mikveh, and women in the room when women go in the mikveh. But it's been brought to my attention that we have to think about this and try to figure out individualized solutions to make everybody comfortable and at ease. Don't know. Bavakasha.
From what I understand,
I apologize for my voice. I came back from Uganda all like with some kind of awful, nothing spooky. My doctor said nothing spooky. The week before I was in Uganda, I was in a city where somebody had died several days earlier of Ebola. That was Omaha, Nebraska. I don't think you have to worry.
From what I understand, part of the conversion process is refusing or sending people away.
Yeah.
To see if they're really...
There's a midrash in Rut Rabba, I think it is, that says so, yeah.
Do you take part in sort of discouraging people?
Yes and no. We don't actively discourage people ever. We tell people, listen, you think you want to convert to Judaism? That's great. You want to study with us? We're happy to teach you. But we recommend that you not define the end of the process before you begin it. You'll study. You might discover, I mean, first of all, we don't think that everybody has to be Jewish. You know, Chasidei Umot HaOlam, Yesh Lahem Chelek LaOlam Haba. You can be a perfectly fine human being and achieve salvation in the Western world's terms without being Jewish. That's our view of the world. So we're not out to try to convince you that you want to be that you ought to want to be Jewish. That's not how we see the world. So study, and if you decide at the end that you want to be a very supportive non-Jewish friend of the Jews, a very supportive spouse of this person you want to marry, but don't actually want to be Jewish yourself, don't regard that as a failure. Think of that as an open option. We will too. We won't regard that as a failure. Not everybody has to be Jewish. In that sense, we're a little bit dissuading. And again, at the end of the process, we do actually say to people, you know, there are plenty of people in the world who recall a time when Jews were hunted down by the millions, rounded up and killed, and massacred, and their bodies obliterated. You sure you really want to be part of this people? Because you don't have to be. You really don't have to be in our eyes. You don't really have to be in the eyes of this family that you're, you know, involved with here in Eretz Yisrael or wherever. it's okay. And this is a pretty, this can be a really momentous choice for yourself and your children and your grandchildren. Do you really want to do this? And we get something that often, usually, that approaches the traditional answer that the halachic sources tell us we should be looking for, which is, I'm not really worthy of it, but I want it anyway. That's kind of what people say to us. They say, yeah, I'm fully aware. And sometimes with adults, I like to kid them as they come out of the mikvah. I say, mazal tov. All around the world, millions of people are already starting to hate you. Did I answer your question?
Yep.
Vakasha.
Could you speak a little bit about interfaith marriages and interfaith relationships? I know this week there was a lot of publicity about the controversial change in the policy.
Yeah, I'm not convinced there was any change in US-wise policy,
really?
But that's another story. I mean, there's a change of wording, but I don't think it, I don't know whether it really meant a change of policy. We're in favor of Jews marrying Jews because we know the statistics that the vast majority of the grandchildren of intermarried couples are not Jewish. Again, from the North American context, we know this. Although Len Sachs at Brandeis has done an interesting breakdown on the Pew study numbers to show that the percentage of children raised as Jews by mixed couples has grown over time as people who are not rejecting their Judaism and their Jewishness marry non-Jews in greater numbers. They're raising Jewish children in greater numbers too. So that's a hopeful sign. But we take issue with the Reform movements and the Reconstructionist movements decision in the 1980s to accept patrilineal descent because we think it's bad policy, not because we think you can't justify it halachically. I think it's perfectly in line with what I understand to be the central focus of Reform Judaism since its inception, which is how do we forge a Jewish identity that's going to be attractive to the maximum number of Jews so that the maximum number of Jews continue to want to remain Jewish in a world in which everybody has a choice about how to live their lives and what community to be part of. I think it's intellectually entirely defensible. I just think it turns out to be, we think it turns out to be bad policy. So it is still, for example, the position of the Rabbinical Assembly that our members are not allowed to be present at an intermarriage, not only not to participate in the ceremony, but we're not allowed to be in the room when it happens, and we're discouraged from being in the party afterward. We express a strong preference for endogamy in our behavior, and we pay a big price for it because it's very hard after that to come back to intermarried couples who are the children of your congregants or your former Hillel students and say, but we want you to be part of our community after you've said to them, but I can't even be at your wedding. It's hard. It's really hard. And our movement, it's one of the reasons that the conservative movement in North America has shrunk and aged because we're not the obvious default option when you create a synagogue in a new community. And it's because we've taken that stand and kept with the same stand for decades. Expressing disapproval of intermarriage. It hasn't made us popular and it hasn't won us many adherents. We just think it's the right approach. So what are you going to do? Did I actually answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Please.
So my question is...
And you'll have to tell me when it's time to wind down. Okay.
Question is two-part. First, if you could clarify
this is great.
Conservative conversions are held and not held within Israeli law.
Sure.
And then the second part is if there's a distinction between those done in
Chutz La'aretz?
Israel and Chutz La'aretz. And
in terms of legal status or in terms of how they're done?
I guess mainly legal status.
Sure.
And
sure.
If there's any sort of reciprocity, if there's a difference, how.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand the reciprocity part, so you might want to come back to me with that if I don't answer that. Okay. So, in the 1980s, when Rabbi Yitzchak Peretz was the Minister of Interior from the then very new Shas party, the courts ruled that he had to list a Reform convert from North America as a Jew. The courts Bagatz determined that although Ottoman law gave the established religious community at the time, meaning the Orthodox rabbinate, a monopoly over wedding and divorce law, that the other area of personal status law, conversion, was not a monopoly of the Orthodox rabbinate. And so the court ordered Rabbi Peretz to, as Sar HaPnim, to sign the papers listing Shoshana Miller as a Jew in the population registry. And a friend of mine is a constitutional lawyer and a former head of the deputy minister of defense told me there was another case that was actually the deciding case. The one that everybody remembers from the news was Shoshana Miller. Rabbi Peretz, by the way, to his credit, resigned. He said, I can't do that. I don't think she's Jewish. And he had a great deal of integrity and resigned and went back to being the chief rabbi of Ra'anana, for which I have great respect for him. But the courts decided then in the 1980s that the state of Israel has to recognize anybody that any normative Jewish community in the world recognizes as Jewish through conversion. So Reform and conservative converts abroad can make aliyah and be listed. And what happens in befall, like on the ground, is that if the Ministry of the Interior doesn't know the names of the rabbis signed on the te'udah, you know, on the conversion document, if they're Reform, they call the Israel Reform Movement, and if they're Masorti, conservative, they call the Israel Masorti Movement. They call my colleague and staff person, Andy Sachs, Rabbi Andy Sachs. And he says, yeah, we'll stand by these people if they're either members of the Rabbinical Assembly, or were at the time, or if they were members of United Synagogue of North America, you know, United Synagogue of Conservatism congregations, even if they're not members of our quaint medieval guild. We assume they're okay, and we stand behind them. And we'll often do that, and so will the Reform for the Reconstructionists. The Hebrew College rabbis and the renewal rabbis have a lot of trouble because the government doesn't know how to deal with them. In the 1990s, in this case with the kids who wanted to go through conversion in order to get bar mitzvah and be part of the Jewish community, the courts ruled that in Israel as well, Reform and conservative conversions have to be recognized by the government, and they are. There is only one class of people who regularly encounter difficulty with a Reform or conservative conversion being recognized by the state of Israel, and that is, can anybody guess?
And by women families?
Anybody who's not white. The Ministry of the Interior will give any African American, any Ugandan for sure, a very hard time recognizing them as Jewish, even if they meet all the legal criteria, if they're not white. We have experienced this enough times over enough years that we are happy to, not happy, but we are ready to say publicly the Ministry of the Interior of the State of Israel is rabidly racist. And we work on an individual basis through the courts to fight that on every single occasion. And we win. But we have to go to court for every non-white candidate.
Ethiopians are not part of that.
Ethiopians are not part of that. Ethiopians are part of the Jewish people. That's been decided. They have agreed that they go through a formal conversion of some sort that doesn't involve us, so I don't really know the details of it. But that's already history. That's happened already.
So that's law of return and registry. Right?
Yeah, if you can, you're a Southern Baptist living in Mobile, Alabama, and you decide you really want to be Jewish, and you go through a serious process of giur, and you become part of a Jewish community, and you stay in a Jewish community after the conversion for a while, then the ministry has no problem with you. Again, if you're, as long as you're white. Again, I'm sorry? You're not eligible for marriage by the Rabbanut, but I think about two-thirds of the Jews in this country now get married with the Rabbanut. The raw numbers don't grow over time, even as the Jewish population grows and grows. There are many, just as we've built lots of kvishim okfei, you know, kvishim okfim, bypass roads, thank you, for Arab towns in the territory. So there are many bypass roads around the rabbinate for marriage and even for divorce. Our Beit Din, on occasion, does divorce proceedings. We do gitin, halachically and properly, even though the state of Israel doesn't recognize it, because we sometimes have people who aren't married under the laws of the state, or they're not citizens of the state and they're living here, and they want a divorce, and we can provide that for them as well. Reciprocity, what was that about?
So, I think you answered it, because you said something in your remarks. You said that the 95 ruling was about the Masorti conversions in Israel.
Yes.
It sounds like they're also...
And Reform the same.
And Reform the same, yeah. but also...
Yeah, that happened in the 80s. The irony is that if you want to convert to Judaism and make aliyah, you're way better off doing it with a conservative or Reform Beit Din in North America or Europe or South America, because we stand behind our colleagues. If you go to an Orthodox rabbi, you have to worry whether the state rabbinate is going to recognize that particular Orthodox rabbi's convergence. They've become very difficult and picky about that. So send all your friends to Reform and Conservative rabbis. However, whatever kind of Judaism they want, if they want to be recognized as Jews by the state, they're way better to come through us. It's ironic. It's crazy, but it's true. Yes. Yes.
So what do you think about the conservative movement or other movements in terms of like Jews that don't fit into the category of conservative Judaism, Orthodox Judaism? Because it sounded like you had opinions about what the Reform movement was doing, so what do you think those Jews should fall into? Like where's the role of those Jews in modern Judaism?
Which?
The Jews that are like going to Reform synagogues and Reconstruction synagogues.
I think they're Jews. I mean, in some cases, I have issues about the technical status of their Jewish identity, maybe, because we don't accept patrilineal descent. So I can't, like, I can't do a wedding for somebody who's a patrilineal Jew, or call them up as bar mitzvah in our shuls or something like that. I'm not sure how to answer your question because I'm not entirely, maybe because I'm not entirely sure exactly what you're asking, but I'm going to give it a stab and then you'll tell me how I did. There is no more taken-for-granted organic Jewish community in the world. Even in the Haredi world, it's all intentional communities. And people are very aware that there's a world outside. They're very afraid of it and insulated from it on purpose. There's nobody grows up like my grandparents in a world in which you were born to Jewish parents, and so you dress differently from the people around you, and my grandparents are from Bessarabia, from villages in northern Moldova today. Jews had their own dress, their own calendar, their own language, their own religious life, their own, it was a completely different society. And you weren't part of both. You were one or you were the other. You were Romanian or you were maybe Ukrainian or Russian or you were Jewish. Nobody experiences that life anymore today, unless you live close to Bathurst Avenue in Toronto. Is anybody from Toronto? Yeah, okay, so. You guys might just wind up living the same lives as your parents because you never broke out of the mold. I don't know. But other than Jews in Toronto, everybody's a Jew by choice in one way or another. I don't think it's legitimate for any Jewish religious movement to say, look, we're the real Jews and everybody else has gone off in the... I mean, I kidded about that earlier, but I don't really believe that we can make the claim that we have the legitimate take on how one should best build a Jewish life and a Jewish future in the modern world. We have our approach, which tries to balance... relevance with authenticity, and makes a variety of choices along that road. And we have colleagues and friends and other communities who will go for lower relevance and higher authenticity. That is to say, mimicking the past. And we have folks who are willing to be way more daring and innovative than we are in how they build their Jewish lives. Again, usually in order to try to keep in a majority of the Jewish people. We recognize the legitimacy of all those approaches, and we think that all the Jewish religious movements and the Jewish secularists of various sorts in this country and in the other contexts that I know in North America are trying to create and foster a revival of Jewish life, a continuation of Jewish life that's creative and viable. And so we, have respect for people who are trying to do it differently from the way we're doing it. Being a pluralist doesn't mean you don't have opinions. It just means that you're willing to live with other opinions even while trying to argue for the correctness of your own opinion. So that's, I think, where we find ourselves, kind of, occupying a nice, comfortable place in the middle range of Jewish life. As I said, trying to balance authenticity and relevance and create patterns of Jewish life that will enable the vast majority of the Jewish people to stay in touch with the Jewish tradition in an authentic and meaningful way for their lives. Did I answer your question, or was that just like blather? Okay, good. Bevakasha.
Somehow that
choice rather than the first choice of getting converted. Like, in other words, like, they would rather have an orthodox conversion here, but because of many reasons they can't, and therefore they come to you. And also, do you have a sense of how many people who went through a conservative conversion with you then chose to also have an orthodox conversion after that?
I think it's natural that you want to go to the publicly funded state institutions that are pretty universally recognized. And we often ask people, why are you coming to us and not to the state rabbinate? And we know the answer now, but back when the state rabbinate was less difficult than it has been, and less demanding and rigid, we would often say, you know, like, you recognize that you come to us for a wedding, it's not going to be recognized by the Ministry of the Interior. Come to us for conversion, and much of the Jewish world will recognize you as Jewish, much won't. Why us? We recognize that as, you know, that's the reality of things. But what's fascinating is that the sense of who we are among the Jewish public has changed. In the past 5 years, someone spoken about this recently here, that the public opinion polls about Jewish identity. When you poll Jewish, several groups have done this in the last 5 years, I think three times. People have studied the Jewish identity of Jewish Israelis. And when you ask Jewish Israelis today, in the past 5 years or so, with what zerem, which denomination do you identify? 7 or 8% will tell you either Reform or Orthodox, or Reform or Conservative. Conservative, 7 or 8% of the Jews. For 7 or 8% of the Jewish community, the shul they don't go to now is not Orthodox, it's Reform or Conservative, or Masorti. That floored us. That completely blew us away. And it's consistent. It's they get 3.5 and we get 3, or they get 4 and we get 3, or we get 4 and they get 3, the Reform and the Basarti. But it means that there's a sea change happening, this tectonic plate movement in the thinking of Israelis. They recognize that not only is there really a variety of types of Jewish life here and a whole range of levels of observance, but which is something that we've known for a long time. But in their heads, people no longer think they have to make a choice between I'm either dati or I'm not dati. I think it's so funny when people call me up and they say, and this happens to me several times in a month, people call me and say, listen, we're a Chiloni family, but we're doing Hanachat Tefillin for our son on a Thursday before his bar mitzvah. Could we? And I say, is this you call Chiloni? If I were giving out grades for Chiloni, you would fail. You mean you're not Orthodox? Well, I'm not either. Let's talk. Okay. The fact that a chunk of the Jewish public recognizes that there are now many ways to be Jewish and many kinds of Jewish religious affiliation and behavior just kind of appeared out of the blue after 30-35 years of our doing weddings and have building congregations that are open on Shabbatot and people come for Kriyat Megillah and people come for Ne'ilah and Kol Nidre and they come for Simchat Torah and they come and see us do weddings and they come and hear us do funerals and Azkarot and speak in, you know, in schools and things like that. And all of a sudden, like, whoa, suddenly we were on the map. It took us all quite by surprise. And the first time it happened, we thought it was a fluke, but it's happened three times in about 5 or 6 years. So we are optimistic that the Jewish future in Israel offers lots more options. And it's, of course, not only us, not only the tiny Reform and slightly less tiny Masorti movement in Israel that are offering new kinds of insights and options and learning possibilities, but there are lots of indigenous, you know, institutions that meet for Kabbalat Shabbat on the beach or meet every week for Kabbalat Shabbat in Nahalal or Batei Midrash for studying Torah all over the country that are not part of the Reform or Masorti undertakings, but are, you know, represent a questioning, an openness of Israelis to asking, what does the Jewish tradition tell me not only about what language I should speak and what army I should fight in, but also how I might live my life, how we might build a welfare system, how we might relate to people in other nations of the world, how we should fight our wars. The idea that the Jewish tradition has wisdom to impart and is not only about your nationality is something that we see a point of view that we see becoming more and more widespread and accepted among the Israeli public. And that's a good thing. It's a really good thing. I think in the end, Reform and Conservative Judaism will be niche markets among many other ways of being Jewish. We just like to establish our niche. That's really all. Questions? Yes, Rachel. And then I'll come back to you. Sorry.
Question.
I got to be careful where I go.
Yeah. Are there Reformed conversions that you don't accept where you at, or either check them out? Do you check every Reformed conversion before marriage? Do you require them to redo something if they don't have feelings?
Right. Do we check Reformed conversions?
That's question number one. Yeah. Or don't accept them. Question number two is, you said here in Israel, the fact that it's such a, the Jewish community is the regular life, your definition of commitment to Torah and Mitzvot is less. What is the definition in America for our conservative conversions? Vis-a-vis commitment to
Tarmac. Okay, yeah, excellent question.
Question number three.
Can't you just hold them? I can't remember three questions.
You're going to run out of time. Question number three is...
I can answer the ones I want, I guess, right?
Would the movement be willing to compromise on any of its ideals so that there could be some type of uniform acceptance of conversion amongst the Jewish people?
Yeah, interesting question. Reformed conversions and our acceptance of them. Some of our rabbis just don't ask the question, and that's considered acceptable. Some of us do. I always ask, what was the conversion? Did the conversion involve immersion in a mikveh? Because many reform conversions have not. Did it involve milah, hatafat dambrit for a boy? I ask those questions, and I've occasionally had people who come to me not for conversion, but for bar mitzvah at the kotel or something, and I've said to them, look, on a technicality, I can't do this. Your child isn't technically Jewish. I don't cast any aspersions. And sometimes the families have said, oh, well, so let's finish the process and take him to mikveh. The kid that's coming in the next few months had that. And sometimes they say to me, im kol hakavod, can you refer, and I offer this also, refer you to a Reform colleague. The Reform rabbis in Israel will recognize the legitimacy of Reform conversions done abroad, even if they don't meet the standards that Reform, the pretty high standards that Reform rabbis in Israel hold to. They have very traditional standards for weddings, for Jewish identity here, but they can't tell their Reform colleagues abroad, I'm sorry, your congregant's not Jewish enough for me. So that's usually a solution. But yeah, I usually ask. And I try to do it in email and not by phone so people don't have to respond on the spot. And I do it explaining to them that this is something I have to do because I'm bound by rules there's always a solution. Let me know what the story is and we'll talk. That was question one. Question two. So yeah, criteria for conversion, say in North America. Yeah, we want to see that people have some level of commitment to Shabbat in their lives, but not necessarily Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. We want to see that people have some awareness and observance of kashrut in their lives, but not necessarily two sets of dishes. We want to see that people are going to be part of a Jewish community. We won't convert somebody who lives up in the hills in Oregon, 80 miles from the nearest Jewish community, which is what we won't do that, because we don't think it's possible to live a Jewish life in an isolated way. Jewish life is community life. But we also ask in a gentle way without trying to raise the question too directly so that we get an honest answer. Are there aspects of Jewish life that you totally reject? Because if there are, if a person says to me, look, the whole business of kashrut makes no sense to me. I have no respect for that whatsoever. We'd have a lot of trouble concluding a conversion under those circumstances. I hope that's a thorough enough answer to number two. And number three was, is it possible to get the whole Jewish community together to have uniform conversion standards? I think it is. We think they'd look a lot like ours, so that'd be pretty easy. I don't know how to speak for anybody but myself on that question. In Denver, there was such a Beit Din for a long time. There's a community Beit Din aside from the one at the University of Judaism in Los Angeles that involves the whole range of non-Orthodox rabbis, but the Orthodox rabbinate is not part of it. Hard to picture. Look, the two things that's hardest for Jews to agree on is doing conversion and Tefillah. The latter you certainly experience all the time at Pardes. It's really hard it's easy to get this community together to learn. We agree on the text that we want to study and the questions we want to bring to them. But getting all Jews together in one minyan where everybody feels okay about how they're davening, that's the hardest thing for Jews to do together. And conversion's up there with that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Let 1,000 conversion courts bloom. We have more time for more questions, or we may have no more questions. Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm sorry. You had your hand up before.
You had mentioned that you've seen the rabbinate become more and more stringent. And what do you think are some of the reasons why?
I think it's sociological. I think that the rabbinate, the state rabbinate of Israel, does not see the entire Jewish people as its reference group. It is there to preserve the standards of an orthodoxy that is pretty radically reactionary and scared of the modern world. We've seen the Haredi right take over the institutions of the state rabbinate in the past 40 years in ways that it didn't before. I understand that view of the world. It makes a certain amount of sense. It makes a lot of sense when you see Jewish social norms evaporating to say, okay, well, let's get together the people who really are committed to this, and let's kind of circle the wagons and create an enclave community so that we can maintain the standards that our people have always... I understand that. I can't live that life myself. But I do understand it, and it has intellectual respectability, but it's at the cost of writing off most of the Jewish people. Most of the Jewish people that defined itself as Orthodox in North America at the turn of the previous century is no longer in Orthodoxy. Many of them aren't in the Jewish community at all anymore. It is important that there be Jewish institutions that are willing to live with people who have commitments outside the Jewish world, who are not fully committed to a life of Torah and mitzvot. In that sense, I think that Masorti Judaism and the conservative rabbinate in North America is a lot like Chabad. We serve a community of people who don't really observe the way we do, but we're there for them. And the fact that our institutions are full of people who, after 40 years, still don't kosher their kitchens is not a success. It's not a resounding failure. I'm sorry, it's not a failure. It's not a resounding success. But it's where the Jewish people is, and that's where we think we need to be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure. I live right up the street. If anybody wants to continue the conversation, I'm happy to walk down Rehov Rivka anytime and sit and have coffee with you here. And bahatzlacha with what you're doing. How many of you are Pardes educators? Yes, go for it. Do it. Excellent. Excellent. How many of you are thinking about a career in the rabbinate? They're all embarrassed to say, yeah. Okay, well, bahatzlacha with that as well. The only problem with becoming a rabbi is that nobody thinks you're qualified to do anything else afterward. So, thank you very much. Have a lovely day.